Welcome to Making Change, a podcast of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. I'm Hilde Gottlieb, author of The Pollyanna Principles and co-founder of Creating the Future. And it is my privilege to host this podcast, where we talk with change leaders from around the world about this sector's potential for creating visionary social change. I'm so pleased to have Tom Kelly as my guest today on Making Change. Tom has been evaluating programs focused on youth and families for the past 20 years. For the past 11 of those years, he has been with the Annie E. Casey Foundation, where he is the Associate Director for Evaluation. Tom's whole career has been focused on determining whether or not change is occurring in communities, which makes his observations immensely valuable to those of us working to create that change. And so it is my pleasure to have Tom share those observations with us today here on Making Change. My guest today on Making Change is Tom Kelly. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. I am fascinated. I have been really looking forward to this conversation. You have been doing evaluation for 20 years, and we all know that when we're evaluating to see what change happened. So I could think of no one better to ask the question, when you're seeing change happen, what are some of the factors that are prevalent when you're seeing significant change happening?
You know, it's interesting because evaluators are often, really we're trained to define that change up front and to really think about helping people define their goals and outcomes up front and then look towards that intentional change. I think, you know, most traditional program evaluation follows that pattern. I think often within philanthropy and certainly within more complex social and community change, it requires a lot of different, not just skills, but methods of actually looking at not just the change we intended, but also the unintentional changes. So just thinking of, with that, a lot of what I've seen both as an evaluator within not just smaller scale program change, but broader social change are the things that are harder to measure and sometimes even harder to document and observe well. And a lot of that has to do with the processes, the connections, the relationships among the people, the organizations, and the moving parts. Oftentimes, I think people talk about that as being the most significant change that occurred in a major effort, not simply the outcomes, but really paying attention to what has changed, what we would call in the system level, in the environment, not just what outcome is occurring based on a certain activity. So when we're seeing really major change, it often is not solely the change that would result from a programmatic intervention, but when we're seeing big change, it's often around the change in the environment, the systems, the structures in which that program is operating. And that's where I think evaluation both gets challenging and fun, is really to think about where programs and how programs exist within systems, exist within communities. And when major change is occurring, it's usually because those bigger structures, systems, and environments are changing, not simply the programmatic outcomes that you'd normally expect.
Are these programs that are creating such systemic change and changing the structures, are they doing so with intent, or is that just happening to happen? Do you see more change happening the more intent there is to change those systems, or can that even be aimed at?
I understand that with certainly complex environments, we can't predict everything. But I do think, and this is something, having seen multiple programs, both simple and more complex, the highest likelihood of change is going to occur when you're acting towards that change. So where there is really good intentionality, not always perfect, but where there is intentionality and there's also focusing around that intention. So your efforts are aligning to that outcome. You're spending more time and effort on that outcome. You are going to see a higher likelihood of achieving that. I think the danger sometimes with throwing up the challenge of complexity is thinking that you can't predict anything and that everything's emergent or everything's organic. And when in fact, what operating a program in a complex environment and evaluating in a complex environment means it requires us to be a little more intentional about where we're aiming and where we're going to look for change. Otherwise, you will get overwhelmed by the multitude of variables changing, whether because of something you did or because of something that was completely unrelated. So I do think intentionality is pretty important. Now, it does mean staying open to those unintentional outcomes or staying mm-hmm. open to things that maybe we couldn't predict as well. But maybe it's still a bias of a logic model-driven evaluator to say, I don't think we can just hope for good change by doing lots of good things without making sure that our intentions are aligned with our strategy and are aligned with the outcomes we're trying to achieve.
It is so interesting because you're right. Frequently, the response that we hear is, well, things are so complex and it would require that we change systems and, oh, we'll never be able to do that. What you're seeing is effective is just the opposite of that, of saying systems are complex and that is why we need to be more intentional in our aiming.
Exactly. And actually, it's not just my experience. I think the recent and soon to be published Voices from the Field document from the Aspen Institute looking across a variety of community change initiatives did find the same thing. You know, initiatives that were more likely to achieve the outcomes that they intended were ones where there was pretty not just intentionality, but pretty strong management to that intent. So people were making sure that their resources and their strategies and their efforts were about achieving those specific outcomes, so that we can't expect just lots of good things to add up without some kind of focus and intentionality. Mm-hmm. Again, leaving open the fact that adaptability is a pretty key component when you're working particularly with social change, because we can't predict everything and we don't control everything.
Do you have any examples that you can share where you've seen this happen and you've seen it happen well?
I'll use one concrete example. And within our Making Connections effort, within Des Moines, Iowa, which was one of the 10 sites, during the initiative, we had initiated a survey of households in the neighborhood. And we certainly were interested in the outcomes that the initiative was striving towards around economic stability of the family, workforce, school achievement for the kids. But there were a variety of other questions just around family well-being, both economic and social. Within Des Moines, the reason I brought it up is what they discovered in their first round of data collection was that a large number of families were carrying a significant amount of debt, but that a significant amount of their credit card debt was actually due to health care costs. Mm-hmm. So in the case of adaptability, you know, normally what the financial education initiative was about getting people to use their credit cards better and understanding debt. But in this case, you know, a healthcare cost is not something you can control. These are people who needed to put healthcare on their credit cards for a reason. And so one, first uncovering that information prompted them to think a little differently around what it meant to provide financial education to folks. So this was not about teaching folks how to use credit cards better. The problem was much bigger. And in this case, they took a step back and said, what's wrong with our system? And in Iowa, they believe they had a really good healthcare system and a really good healthcare financing system. They said, what's wrong with the system that we have so many families that are carrying medical and hospital debt on their credit cards? And so what it did is it forced them to think bigger than what the simple financial stability outcome would be, that take a system approach to say, listen, something's wrong that families are having to acquire this debt, and examining it from that point to say, okay, now we need a system intervention. And so what they ended up doing is actually tackling it at a kind of state attorney general level about what's going on with the hospital billing, how are we allowing families to carry such large debt that could actually bankrupt them, and it's not their fault. They didn't make any consumer choice about this. Mm-hmm. And also, what's been going on with the systems of care within the hospitals that are supposed to provide some charity and charitable benefits. So I think in that case, it was they walked in thinking one thing about family income and asset outcome, and then recognizing that just because the data says that these families were essentially getting worse on their debt, in this case, it wasn't about fixing the families. It was about fixing the system around those families. And I do think when people can suddenly understand that although we're trying to strive towards increasing the family asset building and decreasing their debt, in this case, it wasn't just about providing education to the family. It really was about taking a much bigger, broader view, and that even if our outcome of decreasing debt, we weren't able to fix that in the short term with these families, there was a bigger structural fix that could be done. And what Des Moines did is then literally tackle it so that the state policy level, as well as the relationships they could build up with hospitals about their billing practices.
Wow. Wow. I mean, there are so many different pieces to what you're talking about that seem to go counter to what we so often see. We so often see something that starts out with a small outcome of determining how we can influence family financial well-being, starting small, and when the issue becomes larger, sort of throwing up our hands and saying, well, we did what we could, and here's what our outcomes were. It seems that what this group did was just the opposite of that, saying, again, if the issue is bigger and more complex and needs to be addressed at the systems level, then that's what we're going to hold ourselves accountable for creating. Again, you're talking about that intention, and that focus is on creating family well-being. If what we have to do that is to address it at the systems level, then that's what we'll do.
Exactly. And I think it also opens up this other can of worms, which is about achieving scale. So they could have chosen to act only on the families that they had collected data on, and done a one-on-one with each of those families to try to fix that individual family's debt situation. But in this case, taking the much bigger view of, listen, we could probably achieve better outcomes for a larger number of families in this city if we actually tackled the problem at its source. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was both the policy of the way that medical debt was even being managed and monitored within the state, but also within the systems locally. It just having a good relationship with a hospital so that you could actually negotiate with them around how they actually go about forcing people into a credit card debt situation, which, let's face it, is going to be a barrier to seeking health care the next time around. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly not in their interest as well to start locking people out of accessing health care within the hospital system. So I do think this other key, particularly within philanthropy, goal of achieving scale, oftentimes trying to fix problems one at a time or one off versus taking a much bigger structural view of what's going on with the system could make us a lot more efficient and achieve scale much more easily than trying to fix problems one by one.
Achieve scale sounds so technical. What you're really talking about is creating significantly more impact with the work that we're doing.
And, exactly.
And you're right in that starting with the end in mind, holding ourselves accountable for that end result, is the end result going to be individuals one at a time, or is the end result that you're aiming at accomplishing really community-wide, system-wide change? And that intentionality, again, really focuses everything.
And you bring up this great point that the accountability to those long-term end-stage outcomes, which in this case is making sure that families can accumulate assets and not lose them and get stripped of them, that goal remains the same. That is the outcome we're still striving for. We're just going to get there through a slightly different path, and a path that may actually generate more return than we would be able to do than to just serve these families individually. Well, again, not that some families don't need intervention in crisis situations, but I do think that getting people to recognize that there needs to be a link between their theory about how to kind of help families one at a time and their theory about how they're going to change the systems around those families have got to be linked in some way, and better to make sure that those linkages are tied to the same kinds of intended outcomes we're trying to achieve.
Well, I think that there's a core assumption at play here, which is that when we see something happening one at a time, you can see that that might be the source of that issue might be the individual. When we see it happening over and over and over and over and over again, it is really likely that it's not each of those individuals that are at fault, that there's something systemic going on.
And that's why I think it's crucial for people to pay attention to and invest in good data analysis, and that data analysis might be around defining the problem. That data analysis could exactly be about what are all the different structural levers. And in addition, we've done a lot of data analysis, both with these sites and other grantees, to uncover the stuff that's actually structural. Mm-hmm. You know, structural racism will show up, not in an individual family, but in large numbers of the families that you start seeing big differences that shouldn't be there, that had nothing to do with individual characteristics. We've done some data analysis with our sites on predatory mortgage lending, and there were big differences between racial groups, particularly white and non-white, that shouldn't be there even when you control for the same credit score. So this has nothing to do with the individual family having a different credit score or a lack of good credit. Obviously, something's wrong in the system if the data is telling us that there is a difference in the way predatory mortgage lending is happening in African-American communities, when in fact, when you're controlling for credit scores, the scores are the same. So there's nothing about the individual family. Obviously, something's happening around them. And I do think spending the time and on really good data collection and analysis helps people define these problems better.
One of the things that we find frequently is it's almost a fear of tackling systemic change. Oh, it's too big. It's too complex. We're just one small organization. What can we do? What conditions would need to be in place if we were to change that? If folks were not afraid, what would it take for organizations and coalitions to be willing to and excited about tackling systemic change?
Some of the things actually you already mentioned, I think the first one is feeling and being accountable. Whether I'm a single organization, small nonprofit, or whether I'm a large state agency, if I'm truly feeling and acting in a manner that is accountable to the people, my clients, my customers, my members, you're going to have to drive yourself there. So that's one. I think accountability and making sure you're accountable to some real results, some real outcomes you want to achieve for folks. I think on a related note is that relationship with the, whether you call them clients, customers, members, or community folks, if they're not engaged in a conversation with the service providers or the nonprofit or the foundation, we're never going to really elevate problems. You know, these people live this every day in their community. They are going to be the most motivated to constantly put the hard problems on the agenda. And so whatever relationship a nonprofit, a public agency, or philanthropy has with the communities we're trying to help, that's got to be key. And whether it's constructive engagement and conversation, joint planning, leadership development, and or simply organizing, I think that element has got to be there in order to make it possible. I think the third thing, and this is the hardest one both for philanthropy and nonprofits, and we live it all the time, which is not a single agency nor a single funder is going to solve a large structural problem like this. And so we've got to get out of the silo of single organization, single grant, even single foundation tackling a large problem without being really honest that it's going to take joint effort and joint accountability and a collaborative, not in the simple grant collaborative sense, but a collaborative effort to achieve a systemic change. And we work hard on that every day with all types of small projects, but I think we often fall away from it, or we find it too hard and want to step away from those difficult collaboratives. But it's the problem, and the source of the problem is really at those large structural and system levels. Then we've got to be really serious with ourselves to say, then what would it take to change it? And we've got to organize ourselves around those kinds of strategies.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that we find structurally and systemically that prevents building those collaboratives towards creating that systemic change community-wide is systemic problems within the sector. The one I'm specifically thinking about is the need for attribution. So if we're looking at organizations that are getting funded to participate in something, but they need to attribute the change to their organization, or a funder that is feeling that they need to attribute the change to the funds that they raise, specifically community foundations face this frequently, or United Ways. Again, if that whole issue of it's got to be attributed, it goes directly counter to building those coalitions that can come together to create systemic change. So it's interesting that we need systemic change within the structures we work with philanthropically before we can create those collaborations to create the systemic change.
We face the same challenge in the evaluation of policy and advocacy work. And we've been working on that both within our Kids Count grantee network, along with some other funders like California Endowment and Atlantic Philanthropies. And that the first thing we've often put on the table when these are efforts, and often state legislative or federal legislative advocacy efforts require multiple partners, multiple organizations, and certainly multiple funders, is you've got to put on the table that this, we definitely want to identify our contribution, but to assume single attribution to a single funding source, this is ridiculous. It is not constructive. It's certainly not helpful to the process to worry about all that data collection. I'm, you know, there are models of being able to do that, but, you know, there would waste more time than be worth it.
Right.
So, but if you are all sharing, however, this goes back to the shared accountability to common goals. If you're all sharing some common results and saying, this is how we're going to hold ourselves accountable. And so I can say to my board, and you can say to your board, we are holding ourselves jointly accountable to this set of outcomes. And our investments are going to strive towards doing that. But we're doing it with four other or five other partners and investors. I think instead what it does is it provides this opening for some sharing of goals and measures, not siloing it off to, well, I'm only interested in the capacity building and you're only interested in the legislative advocacy, when we know that it's going to take all those things to get, particularly on complicated things like advocacy and community change, going. Absolutely, should we be underscoring people's ability to attribute change to their strategies so that they know better what to do and know better what to change? So this is where evaluation and self-evaluation becomes so important. We definitely want to help people make that link between their effort and their impact. But I don't see any benefit to figuring out, well, was that your dollar or was that a United Way dollar that did that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's interesting, and we all find this when we work together in collaboratives and coalitions and just cooperative efforts, is that it is not the 3 or 4 or 10 individual organizations, but it is the almost, I've heard someone call it the critter, the creature that is created by the synergies between them. It's the interplay between those 10 organizations, not what each of the, it's that whole sum of the parts versus the whole. The whole being so much greater.
Exactly. But I think that opens up, and to be fair to the funders and or investors, and that includes individual investors and donors, they want to know that their money is making a difference. Mm-hmm. So it does then put a responsibility within, whether it's a single organization or a collaborative, to say, then we are in the business of producing real outcomes.
Yeah.
And real outcomes in return that will make any donor feel comfortable about continuing to invest in the future and feel comfortable that they're getting a return. So that does require us to pay much more attention to what we are getting out of our effort and investment collectively.
Yeah.
And I think there would be a lot more comfort. I think often funders and individual donors and institutional foundations do put requirements in because the collaborative or the individual organization isn't always clear about the impact or return that they're able to provide. And so I think it's the following the money is an unfortunate default out because we haven't been able to quantify impact very well.
Right. In the few moments that we have left, can you share a little bit about what Making Connections is and what you've been doing and what you're seeing?
Sure. Making Connections has been a 10-year investment in 10 cities across the U.S. Specific to low-income neighborhoods of around 25 to 30,000. It ranges across the sites of people. I'm sorry, 25 to 30,000 people. It was meant to build up their capacity in order to address family, economic, and workforce and asset building for low-income families in that community. Look at child-level outcomes, specifically school achievement and grade-level reading. Also look at the connections that these communities have, both internally, the social connections, as well as the connections they have to resources and policy structures outside those communities. It paid a lot of attention to the social networking supports around families, as well as the quality services that are needed. And so this effort had taken a lot of different forms in these 10 places. As you can imagine, then the evaluation has had to adapt to sort of see what has happened in these sort of 10 cities now that we're coming up on our decade.
And what have you found?
It's been interesting that as we are working on completing the evaluation now, a couple of things. I think one thing is, we're trying it very hard to make that return on investment case for community capacity building. Mm-hmm. And so one, being able to measure that well and measure that in a way that not only the evaluator agrees with the people on the ground being evaluated, but that we all have a general sense that this is, in fact, a change in the way the community operated from when we began. And so trying to make that connection between is capacity building really producing outcomes has been one key step. The second thing is, and we can see this with a portfolio of 10 sites, there are a set of sites where integration, collaboration, being able to put all the pieces together did make a difference. Mm. It wasn't just about doing lots of things well simultaneously, is that when there was a real intentional effort to keep integration not only across the programmatic silos, but across the level of system, organizational, or even family individual level. When the team works well together, and that team includes partners in multiple organizations, and they share the same vision, and they share the same set of goals, and they share an accountability framework, I'm predicting, just as we look at our data now, the sites that have done that have actually been able to accomplish more, reach more families, and achieve impact for those families better.
It's wonderful to see that in the data. We know it anecdotally. It's wonderful to see it in the data.
And we're really trying hard to do that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to. What I'm looking forward to also is learning from the actual methodologies that you're using to evaluate transformational change over the long term. Because that's again, frequently what we hear is, well, we can't do that. It's too big. It's too no. We just need to assume that we're going to do it.
And actually, one thing, and I'm excited about that as well, is, I don't think there is a magic ruler, but I do think we had a very participatory and interactive process with the site for agreeing how the ruler gets defined, so that I'm less worried about whether San Antonio and Des Moines are on the same scale, but I'm more interested to know that San Antonio can say definitively that it is different at time two than time one, and this is how they're measuring it, and this is the evidence for that change, and worrying less that scale is the same scale that we might use in a different community.
It's great. It's great. Tom, I wish we had 2 more hours to talk. I thank you so much for sharing, and the only thing that I will ask is that you promise to come back and share more the more you learn out of the Making Connections.
Absolutely. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Talking with Tom makes me feel like we can accomplish anything at all. Yes, it takes work, but if there's one thing this sector is not afraid of, it's work. Tom shared 2 key components to aim that work at creating community change. The first is relationships. Tom talked about organizations and foundations and agencies all working closely together, but he also talked about working closely with the people whose living conditions we're intending to change. Which brings us to Tom's other key component, the issue of accountability, of intention, of aiming. As Tom shared in his examples, the greatest likelihood for change happens when we're holding ourselves accountable for creating that change. From there, change happens when we align all our efforts and manage towards the very outcomes we're holding ourselves accountable for creating. We would all smile and nod in agreement with those observations. I confess my own smile comes from the fact that Tom's data-driven observations confirm our own experimentation at creating the future. That experimentation is what led to our making this principle the very first of the Pollyanna principles. We accomplish what we hold ourselves accountable for. The real question then becomes, what are we holding ourselves accountable for? Who are we holding ourselves accountable to? And then, as Tom suggested, we ask ourselves, how are you aligning your work behind the change you want to see? I hope you will share your own stories with us as we explore this important topic together at the Making Change discussion group at LinkedIn. If you are not already a member of that group, just type Making Change into the search box at LinkedIn to join the group and join the conversation. And don't forget, you can always find great ways to connect, as well as other terrific information, at the Chronicle of Philanthropy's website, philanthropy.com, or follow the Chronicle on Twitter at philanthropy. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Making Change. If you have ideas for future guests, folks who are driving new ways of thinking about what it takes to create visionary social change, please get hold of me on Twitter, I'm @HildeGottlieb, or at our website, creatingthefuture.org. Thanks for listening and for wanting to create a better future for your community and our world. For the Chronicle of Philanthropy, I'm Hilde Gottlieb. We'll see you the second Thursday of next month here on Making Change.